Meeting will come to order. Today we have the stage of our bill where we're dealing with the three.
You want to hear me?
Thank you.
This is the parts on parks and trails, the heritage, and the water portions of the bill will be considered today. We will take amendments and listen to public testimony as well. And so, before we get into that, we have a quorum, so we'll do the minutes of March 12th. Is there a motion to approve? Representative Winkler moves the minutes of March 12th. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes. And now, we will move to House File 1061 as amended. And I'll begin today with the author's amendment labeled H1061A22. I guess I can move that we'll put the bill in the form that I want it. So, you have the amendment before you. Let me go through it.
A22.
Today, I will go through the amendment, ask questions as we go along. It increases the appropriation for restoration audits on outdoor heritage-funded projects to $84,000. This is the governor's recommendation. We simply had a mistake made before. This is what the governor had intended. It makes the requirement to have the DNR commissioner approval for land acquisitions apply only when the DNR will be the one to own the land. This increases the appropriation for restoration audits on clean water funded projects to $84,000. Once again, this is the governor's recommendation. This is what was intended and somehow did not get transcribed correctly. It allows the appropriations for Bowser from the Clean Water Fund to be available until spent, that at the request of Bowser. It provides an additional year for the use of Parks and Trails Fund appropriations and also extends the availability to match federal funds. It makes the LaSalle Lake project funding available for other DNR acquisitions for parks and trails if the acquisition isn't completed by July 15, 2012, or there are funds available. It establishes the LaSalle Lake State Recreation Area in statute. We also, again, a lot of these are technical changes. We had a little flip-flop of some numbers in the arts board appropriation. So it changed the total arts appropriation from 21,644 to 21,664 each year to match the spreadsheet. And after consultation with the Historical Society, this does not change the total amount within these funds. It just redistributes the money within these four funds. We decrease funding for local historic and cultural program grants from $6 million to $5.25. We increase the Historical Society program funding for their programs and purposes from $4 to $5 million. We reduce funding for archaeological surveys from $275 to $250, and we reduce the funding for the digital library project from $475 to $250, and this is at the request of the Historical Society. We extend the availability of Arts and Culture Heritage Fund, ACHF, appropriations to Public Television Association, Minnesota Public Radio, and AMPRS until spent. We appropriate ACHF dollars to the Disabled Veterans Rest Camp in Washington County, $400K, and the veterans on the Lake Resort in St. Louis County, $50,000. Now, I mentioned yesterday when we said that it was taken out of the parks and trails that it may resurface, and this is how it's resurfacing. It's coming off basically the bottom line of the Arts History Culture Fund. We establish the Capital Preservation Commission in statute and appropriate $550,000 to the Department Administration to support it. This will cause this bill to make a brief stop unless it's waived at the Government Operations Committee, State Government Operations, to because we are creating a commission. We modify a reporting requirement for entities that award competitive grants from legacy funds so that the legatees do not the legatees? That's a new word. When you it's my word. When you combine legacy and entity, it comes up legacy. So if the entities do not have to submit applicable conflict of interest statements to the LCC, but instead must keep these statements on file and available to the public for at least 5 years. So we change a little bit what we're looking at. It puts the onus actually on the whoever's requiring of the reports. We modify the requirement that all recipients post the legacy logo on their website to state that the logo must link to a separate page on the recipient's website where a member of the public can find both a contact person for more information as well as a link to the legacy, to the LCC legacy site. So, that is my amendment. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, does this, these financial changes still keep the 33, 33, 14.25, and 19.75 percentages for each of the funds?
Representative Murphy, yes, it does.
All right.
Other discussion on the office amendment? Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I remember previous discussion about the veterans camps and discussing which fund the money should properly come from. And as I recall, we discussed the Parks and Trails Fund as being the most appropriate source of funding for this rather than arts and cultural heritage. And I wonder if you could explain why suddenly a veterans camp is an arts project instead of a park.
Well, Representative Winkler, upon further review and being contacted by nonpartisan research, it was determined that perhaps we were running afoul of some legalities by doing that, that a the Parks and Trails Fund had restrictions on private entities not being able to accept this money. And that's why it was moved. There were a lot of different changes we would have had to make to law. We could have done it. It could have been possible. We would have had to make several statutory adjustments to do it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you're maybe creating a constitutional adjustment with this one, but I guess if you just write it in statute, will work itself out or not later. I'm sure nobody
will. We'll have to, Representative Winkler, appreciate that. We'll have to see what happens.
And Mr. Chair, I guess the Veterans Camp and the Capital Preservation Commission and the duties that they have for the $550,000 that they receive are projects that would typically be funded through bonding. And I wonder if you could explain why we wouldn't be doing bonding funds for a camp or for a capital preservation type project.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Appreciate the question. The to answer the part on the creating the commission, again, in discussion with nonpartisan staff, I think it is feasible, appropriate, whatever word you want to use, for us to use a portion of our funding for pre-design. And that is what we're doing. I have no intention next year or supporting however long I'm here, capital money going to fix the capital. That should be bonding money. I'm separating out that the design, the pre-design can be funded by us, but beyond that, once you get into the actual improvements of the capital, the proper expenditure is capital investment.
So, Mr. Chair, then it's your position that we've gone as far as we can with the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund in capital expenditures for the state capitol building in this bill because it goes up to pre-design.
Representative Winkler, yes.
And Mr. Chair, but then what about the veterans camps? Because I had understood that that money would be going well beyond pre-design and would be going to actual making improvements, which I support.
Those are
Representative Winkler. I also support a bonding bill.
Representative Winkler, it's a fine project, and it certainly fits within the definition of Minnesota culture.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's not fair to make worthy projects, hold them hostage to the politics of the state capitol, but I think we all know that if the politics here were better and we were more honest about where sources of funding should come from, this wouldn't be in this bill.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Appreciate your comments. Further discussion? Those in favor of the author's amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Passes. Okay, thank you. Sorry for the brief pause to organize here. The have a series of amendments to go through, and I believe we'll start with A7. And who is offering A7?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm offering A7.
Proceed, please, Representative Green.
Just a moment. I've got to pull it out. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess just to get this out up front, I'd like to request a roll call vote, please.
Okay, thank you. Roll call vote has been requested.
Essentially, what this amendment does is it takes lines, apologize, I didn't think I'd be first, it takes lines 213 through 223, or 225, I guess, of the budget and of the proposed budget and replaces it with the governor's recommendations. And what's really at the heart of my recommendation that we move in this direction is it's about the 40-40-20 versus 42-42-16 and what I consider to be fair. We've heard various bits of evidence. We've heard that 65% of the legacy fund comes from the metro area. We've heard that 55% of the population of Minnesota is in the metro area. In the context of the entire bill, about 20% of the funding for the from the legacy fund ends up in the metro area. So I think it's fair to propose that for this part of the budget that the split be 42-42-16. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Thank you, Chair. Just like to go on record because I as the author on the Metropolitan Parks, I am in support of this.
Further discussion? Anyone else want to say anything? We did have a pretty good discussion yesterday. There's no one else anywhere.
They're
We will come to a vote. Roll call has been called for.
Chair Erdahl?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Just a moment.
Could we hold this over? I wasn't expecting it to be first, and I know that there's some interested parties who aren't in the room.
Members or?
Yeah.
We could try to round up the members for you. Let's try to round up the members. Pages, could we get your lassos and find them?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dell.
I guess I recall us rounding up members, but I don't ever recalling us holding up or proceeding to round up members.
No.
I mean, I'm here because I'm supposed to be in another committee.
All right. Let's, Representative Pepin is now here, so we will proceed with the vote.
Okay. And she may be interested in discussing. It wasn't just about the vote.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Erdahl.
No.
Representative Keel.
No.
Representative Dill.
No.
Representative Cornish.
No.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes.
Representative Winkler.
Yes.
Representative Torkelson.
No.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative McFarland.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Pepin.
The vote being 6 in favor and 6 against, the amendment fails. We will now move to A11. Representative Dill.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A11 amendment essentially puts into the provisions $1 million each year of the biennium for the Minnesota Conservation Corps comes out of the DNR appropriation, the aggregate appropriation in the bill. And I have checked with DNR at least 4 times, and they are perfectly fine with the language. And including, I got the high sign in the audience here on this as well, just there in the last minute or two. So. Unless someone wants to testify for or against.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dill. Any further comments? Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dill, for bringing it forward. I just want to say I support the amendment.
Anyone else? Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Next, we'll do A3, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move this amendment. It is a the working group that was suggested earlier. The only thing is I would like to make a more an oral amendment to change November 15th, 2011, to 2012.
Okay. On line 1.15, the date is changed from 2011 to 2012. Anyone have an objection with that? The author's amendment is carried.
Yes.
Okay. Any further comment? Discussion? Anyone? Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. A5, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really more or less a technical correction that allows some of the funding from last year's last biennium's bill to be carried forward in both the PCA and the Department of Agriculture as language that was brought to me by the departments.
Further discussion? Members, Anyone else? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passed. Now, A10, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would like to move it. We're all about outcomes for our waters. And in this particular, page 33 of the bill, we are giving money to the Department of Agriculture for a best management practices loan program. We're giving it to them without any defined outcomes. And so I was trying to help out here by giving us some defined outcomes. But I would like to amend my own amendment, if I could, to say that it's to provide loans to projects that keep water on the land or subsurface sewage treatment system projects.
So Representative Wagenius, or what?
Or subsurface sewage treatment system projects. That is the kind of the longhand for the shorthand when we say SSTS. And I'd like to incorporate that into my amendment and then tell you about it.
All right. So on line 1.4, add or subsurface sewage treatment project.
System project,
and that is incorporated into the amendment. So continue, please.
Okay. Members, if you will, look, we're giving money to the best management practices loan program, but in on lines 3311 and on lines 344, both of those sections of money are used to evaluate whether best management practices actually help the waters. So because we don't know whether all of the best management practices that can be used, they haven't been tested to see if they work for waters, then the better way to have an outcome is to specify what we want. And one of the things that we want is to keep water on the land, to slow it down. We've all heard that testimony from Bowser. I just want to tell you, that's basically it, and I'd be glad to take questions.
Representative Parkinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius, for bringing this forward. Certainly, the addition of SSTS projects is an appropriate addition, but there's other areas of work that you're leaving out by changing this language, such as work on feedlots and other erosion control work that we do know helps water quality. So I would urge members to vote against the amendment.
Discussion. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the politics here of this, but it seems to me that if you would like work done on feedlots with this money or for erosion control, we should say that that is what the money can be used for if they're best management practices that actually protect the water. So we want to make sure that the water money actually goes for things that are known to protect water and not just things we've done in the past. And members, I will bring up this story because it's a true story. You know, Governor Carlson in 1992 said, we want to clean up the Minnesota River, and he said we're going to have a 10-year project to get it done. And at that time, he had the river tested for the biology of the river, which is the best kind of testing to do. And in the interim, we have spent almost $1 billion of state money. And in addition, federal monies have been spent on the river. And there's been no change in the river. So we want to make sure that the things we do now are things that we know will change, not just the things we've done in the past, but things that will actually have an outcome that means cleaner water. And so that's why I'm putting this amendment in here. And members, I will tell you, we haven't heard a report from PCA, but with the clean water money 2 years ago, we asked them to retest the Minnesota River, which they have done. And there is a preliminary report out, and we'll hear from them. But we're going to see no major change in, or significant change in that river. So it's all about taking care of people's money and having good outcomes for water.
Any further discussion? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question of clarification for Representative Wagenius. Did you say $1 billion? We've spent $1 billion on the Mississippi over 10 years with basically no effect.
Representative Wagenius.
Between that, in that time, until 2009, we've spent $927 million. We know we've spent money since then, but that number hasn't been brought up to date. So I should say almost a billion.
Further discussion? Anyone? We'll come to a vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Fails. The next amendment, A-15, Representative Keel. Move your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Amendment. Chair. Yes, I would like to move this amendment. This is $175 is a grant for the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition to develop, define, and develop some information. I would like to amend this in a couple of spots, give it an oral amendment. The first one would be on line 116, line 116, including the number of users and potential users of Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails.
Okay, line 1.16, yes. Add users and potential users.
Right. Right after users.
You will incorporate that in.
Yes, please. And then also on line 122, add a that no local match is required for this grant.
After the period, no local match is required for this grant.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's incorporated into your amendment?
Yes.
And you did mean $175,000, not $175, right? Because I thought that might have been another amendment you were incorporating.
Yes, that's true. I meant $175,000. $175,000 wouldn't get us very far.
Okay, to your amendment as amended.
Correct.
Other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh. Which one? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if we could hear from the Greater Minnesota Regional Park, the coalition, of their ability to do this study, or should we have a more open mind about who's doing the study? I'm just curious. I see them identified to do the study, and I just your capability to do the study.
Yes, Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, Dan Larson, Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition. I've got Barry, why don't you identify yourself?
Barry Windorf, Isani County Parks Director and Representative of Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. We will not be able to receive the money directly. We would have the money go through the DNR and work with them to help us coordinate our efforts to do the survey and visitation user numbers.
Representative McNamara, this is in the DNR section, so it's under their funding appropriation. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just curious, would you hire a consultant to do this work for you, or do you intend to do this internally as a coalition?
As a coalition, it would be hired as a consultant.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, so just so I understand, you would not hire a consultant to help you?
That is incorrect. We would hire a consultant.
Oh, you would? Oh, good. That makes me feel better. I was going to tell you there may be an amendment at your next stop. Thank you.
That was my question.
Any other questions of Mr. Larson and Mr. Windroth? Excuse. Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, I wonder if you could, where does the money, the $175,000 come from? And is it taken from the Greater Minnesota Parks grant program? Is that an earmark within the program, or where does that money come from?
It comes out of the grants. It's defined. Yes.
Representative Winkler, it comes out of the grants.
Comes out of the grants, yes.
Or the Met Council, either portion. All right. That was it.
6-6, Mr. Chair.
Any other further discussion on this? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just interested in the addition of the sentence, no local match is required. I'd be happy to just hear from perhaps you, Representative Keel, about an explanation for why no local money will be involved there.
You know, I'm going to refer. Oh, excuse me. Can I refer to Mr. Larson and have him explain
Mr.
that part
Larson.
Of it?
Chair, Representative, thought on this was to protect as much of the funding from going into thought is not to have a to have the local match. This isn't necessarily dollars that are going to a project. This is dollars for a park or trail project. This is for planning dollars. So we want to make that this discernment in the language, and that's the intent.
Representative Green.
Thank you. I guess I don't know the specifics, but I'd just like to comment that I don't think the 20-year plan that was created by the Met Council was funded entirely by the state.
Thank
I know
you,
that's not your fault.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Larson. Mr. Windroth? Anything else on the amendment? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passes. Representative Wagenius, A-17.
Mr. Chairman, this is, members, this is an amendment that retains the exact same amount of money going to Bowser as for Waters as does this bill, but again is having defined outcomes rather than a list of things that may be done. So there are four specific outcomes for water that are listed here, and I'll just let you know what they are. On 1-9 is to keep water on the land in order to decrease sediment pollutants and nutrient transport, to reduce hydrologic impacts to surface water, and to increase infiltration for groundwater recharge. That's one specific outcome. The second is to do projects and practices that are prioritized based on benefits. That's the second outcome. The third is performance-based criteria. That's on line 2.3. And the fourth is on line 2.12, utilize a watershed approach. So again, members, one of the things we want to make sure we do is to have defined outcomes for Minnesotans and things that we know will work to protect our waters. That's what Minnesotans wanted when they asked for this amendment. We want to just make sure that this money is not being used to backfill cuts to Bowser. And with this amendment, that won't happen because we have not
The only previous money for specifically keeping water on the land was in the last legacy bill that we did 2 years ago, and Bowser did not have a program to do that previously, so we would be avoiding with this language any question of supplanting. So with that, I think in this case I would like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Further discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you, Representative Guinness, for bringing this forward. I'm going to urge members to vote against it, but before we do that, I would like to have a little more discussion. First, I'm wondering why, you know, SSTSs are a big deal, and they were addressed in the original language, and you've left them out of your amendment. Would you care to redress that?
Representative Guinness.
I think if you look on page line 1.12, it's increase infiltration for groundwater recharge, that SSTS would fall under that category. So that SSTS would be an appropriate use of this money.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. That's a bit of a stretch, but when I believe mentioning SSTS specifically was urged on me by a number of folks. Second, I would like to ask Representative Guinness just what she means by a watershed approach when it comes to applying projects.
Representative Guinness.
I think one of the things that we have heard from the Pollution Control Agency is that they are using a watershed approach when looking at cleaning up our waters. And we probably will hear from them this afternoon on the use of a watershed approach. The Clean Water Act also calls for a watershed approach to cleaning up our waters. One of the things that I think that we all have to be careful about is that we're just not putting out money and sprinkling it upon the land, that we are targeted to cleaning up so Minnesotans can see that actually our waters are getting cleaner. Because I think Representative Torkelson and you and I would share the opinion that we want this to work, and we want it to work so that Minnesotans will vote for this constitutional amendment. So we want to show progress, and probably the best way to do that is with the watershed approach. Now, on a technical level, I think hearing from PCA and how they are using the watershed approach would be better than hearing from me.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly am aware of the watershed approach when it comes to approaching TMDLs, approaching intense monitoring and testing. But when it comes to fixing things on a landscape, I don't understand why a watershed approach really makes a difference. I mean, if there's something wrong on the landscape, we want to fix it, whether it's happens to be in a watershed that's being emphasized that particular year or not. If it's any place in the state of Minnesota, if you've got a septic system that's a straight pipe to waters and causing pollution, we want to get those fixed. We don't want to wait for the 10-year cycle to go by till we hit that particular watershed with testing. So I really don't understand that. If you'd like to bring PCA down and maybe they could explain that to me, I'd be happy to hear it.
Okay.
Representative Guinness.
I think part of what is going on here is, do we just scatter the money across the state, or do we say we're going to emphasize some watersheds where we're going to be more strategic with spending our money so that we know that we can test out what we're doing and say, this is working, this is cleaning up this watershed, it can be replicated across another watershed. We have not had the success. We don't have the demonstrable success that we need at this moment to be spending a huge, huge amount of money. We want to show that we can get outcomes. That's, and I guess that's the best I can do for you in terms of saying, why would we would want to be strategic and not just say random acts of conservation is what people have termed what we've been doing before and what people are recommending that we do, just like you do conservation agriculture. You would do, not conservation, what's the word? Very precise agriculture. We would do precise conservation and be targeted to the highest and best outcome that we can get. We don't have that targeting to the highest and best outcome at this point.
Representative Torkelson.
Just briefly,
can you top random act of conservation?
I am not the wordsmith that Representative Genius and her colleagues are. I would just add that this is a competitive grant program, and a competitive grant program in itself helps us target these efforts to where they're needed. I do understand the watershed approach, and I think it is appropriate, but I don't think it's necessarily appropriate for this particular spending category. Bowser has relationships with local units of government all across the state of Minnesota, and to restrict these funds just to these targeted watersheds, I think, would interfere with a process that has been in place and keeps people involved with conservation all across the state every year, and I think that's important.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree that that is important, but I would say it's more important that we spend this money for the highest and best use for the best outcomes that we can get. And our past practice, what we have done and why the Minnesota River has not been cleaned up, I think, is because we have done what we've always done in the past and said, well, if we do more of what we've done in the past, things will get better. But we have no evidence that that will happen. So we have to be smarter about spending the people's money, and I think that is what I'm after here.
Further discussion? Anyone? We have a roll call.
Mr. Chair, I think the word...
Representative Wagenius.
When I was drinking it, I think it's precision agriculture that you do. Am I right about that, Representative Torkelson?
That would be correct.
And I believe it was Dr. Mullah who suggested that we do precision conservation. And that I thought he was correct in saying that we should, just as we do precision agriculture, we should do precision conservation.
Thank you. Anything else? We have a roll call.
Chair Erdahl?
No.
Representative Keel?
No.
Representative Dill?
Yes.
Representative Cornish?
No.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Representative Winkler?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
No.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative McFarland?
No.
Representative McNamara?
No.
And Representative Pepin?
No.
Five yeses and seven noes. The amendment fails. Are there any other amendments?
I have another one that's...
Representative Wagenius?
I did have submitted another one, 12.
Representative Wagenius, what I was told is that we incorporated that into the amendment that I started with. Am I mistaken? Did we not have the whole piece in there?
You may have. What I heard you say, Mr. Chair, was you're changing the dollar amount from... on waters, and I was putting this for heritage. At least that was my intention. I didn't check the numbers. Yeah, it is.
Excuse us. We'll double-check here.
I think you are maybe right, Mr. Chair. I heard Waters, but that's...
Representative Wagenius, I have before me A-12 and A-2. And A-2, line 1-3, says, page 18, line 4, delete 42,000, insert 84,000. And in A-12, line 1.3, says, page 18, line 4, delete 42,000, insert 84,000.
Good for you, Mr. Chair.
And it was line 1-3 in mine. So.
Thank you. I had heard Waters, and so maybe I misheard.
I may have misspoken. I don't remember. Any other amendments? Representative Winkler. Well,
Mr. Chair, this is something that came up in discussion since our last meeting, and I don't know, it may be possible to do a simple oral amendment, but it may not be, and I guess I just open it for your reaction. But on page, I think the easiest place to look is on page 66, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, section 7, administrative allowance. And it says that you can spend no more than 5% of the money for indirect costs and institutional overhead charges, whereas on page 18 for the Lessard or for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, it says they specifically can't be spent on indirect costs or institutional overhead. So there's an inconsistency between the four funds as drafted, and there's also an inconsistency then I think, with the language that you have on page 71, lines 71.31 to 71.32, where it says that money may not substitute for traditional sources. It just seems to me there's no better case for traditional sources of funds than indirect and institutional overhead costs. We're inconsistent in how we're treating the four funds. And I wonder if maybe you talked about this and I missed it, but I have a simple oral amendment that would make it more consistent, but maybe you have a good reason for doing it the way you did.
Well, thank you, Representative Winkler. And I'm not sure if I want to take this up today or not. We certainly do need to do something. I recognize the inconsistencies. Anything that you can do that would, help us to make this more clear. As I said yesterday, and actually if we had time, I would have thrown our discussion open to administrative indirect cost again today. But we have to reach some type of conclusion on this. If we can do something that makes sense right now, I will. Otherwise, Representative Winkler, let's get together on this and try to come up with something. Technically, what I wanted to do today, and I know that there is some overlap, as you suggested, but the language portions that deal with this I wanted to deal with when we meet after break on that first Tuesday.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I can share with you my idea.
Give me your idea, and we'll. I hope we get some more good ideas on this.
Okay.
Representative Winkler.
Well, I guess I'm looking at this. Well, there are three different places in the bill where this appears. And if you go to page 66, I guess, that's where I referenced before, section 7, administrative allowance, it says money appropriated in this article may not be spent on activities unless they are directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation. And that language mirrors the outdoor heritage language. And it says, unless otherwise specified in this article, an entity that receives money through a direct appropriation or a grant funded by an appropriation in this article may spend no more than 5% of the money for administration, indirect costs, and other institutional overhead charges. That seems to be inconsistent. I thought the simple...
Which lines were those again, please?
66.3 through 66.8.
Okay, yes.
And it seemed to me that a simple way to do it on line 66.8 would be to strike indirect costs and other institutional overhead charges. So then the section would say that money appropriated in the article must be spent directly, it must be directly related to and necessary for the appropriation. And then it says that no more than 5% can be on administration. So it's saying that any administrative cost must be directly related. So there would be no institutional overhead and no indirect costs if you struck that language. It would make it at least more consistent with what the outdoor heritage language is.
Okay, thank you, Representative Winkler. I guess I would invite just a little discussion on that today. I think Mr. Nobles, are you around here somewhere? There he is, hiding behind the chair. Would you answer that question, please? Mr. Nobles, did you understand the point raised by Representative Winkler and what the implications of that would be?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Jim Nobles, legislative auditor, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an issue that you and I discussed, and I really appreciate your concern and interest and your work on this to try and refine the language so that there is clarity. I think that's one of the important things that we need as we go out and do the audit work, and I think that the agencies and other recipients of this money need as well. I think there is also introduced here a question, which was talked about last time, of complying with the constitutional requirement. And I think there is certainly the possibility that as we approach agencies using legacy money for overhead costs, we get very close to the constitutional prohibition. If, for example, you have an agency or organization that has traditionally used money to pay its rent, insurance, security costs, or other things that I think would be considered overhead costs and may also be referred to as indirect costs, and now they receive legacy money and they start covering some of those costs with legacy money, I think we're getting very close to a substitution concern. Now, there could, of course, be situations where an organization receives legacy money and it, because of the project or the program that they're being asked to implement with legacy money, their rent, their insurance, their security costs, or other costs that are normally considered overhead or institutional costs could increase in some marginal way. And then I think we get into the more direct language, which would possibly allow that to be appropriate. But it becomes a very fact-based situation that I think you're going to have to examine. But I think that Representative Winkler points to certainly an inconsistency within the bill where you have the outdoor heritage language, as was quoted, specifically prohibiting the use of legacy money for indirect costs or overhead costs, and then in the other three funds explicitly allowing it. So I think, again, there's the inconsistency. But with the three funds as currently written in the bill, being allowed to use money from those three funds for indirect overhead institutional costs, I think it can certainly raise the constitutional issue of not using legacy money to substitute or supplant traditional sources of funding. So I think it is definitely something that needs to be considered, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nobles. And so you are suggesting, well, I could make this point. Yes, at first blush, there is inconsistency here. But the fact is the four funds are inconsistent themselves in the way, you know, money is being spent in some regards. Their needs aren't all consistent is what I'm trying to say. Am I correct? Mr. Nobles?
Well, Mr. Chairman, indeed, and I think, as I was suggesting, there could be a fact situation, either with the Outdoor Heritage or the other three funds, where the need and directly related to language would allow coverage of such things as increased rent, increased insurance. But I think the intent here, I think, all along with the legacy amendment was to build on what we already have in organizations, not to come in with legacy money and backfill budget cuts not to come in with legacy money and pay for the normal traditionally covered expenses of an organization. So, Mr. Chairman, I think we can, even with some consistency in statutory language, allow for some exceptions in the particular fact situation that an organization has. But I think, Mr. Chairman, that again, even within the language for the three funds that was referenced, that is on page 51, 54, and 66, which again allows those organizations for the three funds to use money for indirect costs, you could even say, Mr. Chairman, there's some inconsistency there, because your first provision is that all of the expenses have to be directly related to and necessary to implement the program or project. And yet in the next sentence we say, but you can spend 5% of that appropriation for administration and indirect costs. So even within those provisions, I think there's at best some ambiguity, if not some inconsistency. On the one hand, saying it has to always be directly related, but then saying it can also include expenses that are indirect. So I think that ambiguity needs to be cleared up, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Noble. Do you suppose, Mr. Soderberg, would you care to work with Mr. Nobles on trying to figure this out?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions of Mr. Nobles? Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to offer an amendment, unless you're going to tell me that it's out of order because it wasn't submitted, which is, of course, your authority to do.
I think, Representative Winkler, I think I actually would do that today, simply because I want to have a little more discussion on this, and you know, I actually had planned on accepting amendments on the Tuesday when we come back on language. So language and the arts, history, culture portion of this bill will be considered on that Tuesday. I don't really mean to discourage you. I just think that you might get a better hearing if we're able to work this out in the meantime. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to say that I think Mr. Representative Winkler is absolutely on the right track here. I agree with him wholeheartedly and hope that we can get this fixed.
You mean the whole bill?
I don't know what to say to that. But, no, as I've said, I believe yesterday, I mean, that the two biggest stumbling blocks, if you will, had been that percentage split that indicated by our 6-6 split here, you know, what that is, and the administrative cost and the indirect cost. This is a very difficult thing to figure out. It's like the Gordian knot of this bill. And you want to do it right, you want to do it fair, and I know that there are folks out there that have their concerns, but we have to reach some type of conclusion, obviously, very soon. Mm-hmm. So if you've got some good ideas or bad ideas, I don't care, we'll look at them too, submit them to us, and we'll make sure that Mr. Soderberg and Mr. Nobles are happily working away. Or Mr. Sullivan, Ms. Taylor, it'll be a group project. So with that, at this point, if there are no further amendments on this bill, what we'll do is just continue the bill, and it will be next Tuesday, a week from Tuesday, 2 weeks from yesterday. However, at this point, we do have some time for public testimony on this. Now, again, I would prefer that you confine your public comments today on the monetary aspects of these three bills that we have been discussing today. The particular concerns on language, unless you've got some real good ideas on what we can do with the administrative cost, we'd prefer next 2 weeks from yesterday when we come back. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I note for the record that I was the one that put these in and why?
Yes.
Is this an appropriate time to do that?
You can do that right now. Okay. And by the way, I wanted to also note for you that there is a memorandum from Mr. Nobles that had been placed in your packets actually once before, and it is there again today. So if you don't remember it from before, try to charge up your antenna with that. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, members. I am well aware of my minority position here in getting changes made to this bill, but I think we need to talk about one of the I think great gaps in this bill, and that is providing any money for the geologic atlases, which are the way that we determine how much groundwater we have in Minnesota. And so we're in a 10-year plan to check out our surface waters, but we are on a 25-year schedule to deal with or understand our groundwater. And that's not appropriate. The geologic atlases are basic data, absolutely basic data, is sort of akin to the monitoring that we're doing on our waters, only it's basic data in telling us how much water we have. It's not telling us the quality of it, but it is telling us how much water we have. So one of the things I wanted you all to see were some maps where geologic atlases are being done now. And that would be this map right here. And this is a little bit of the schedule. It's not in color, but it shows where geologic atlases are being done. But the important map I want to show you is this, and this is Minnesota's water supply. And so you compare these two maps together, and you see the orange, whole orange section of Minnesota where it says groundwater limited, available only in isolated aquifers. We are just starting to study that area with, and Clay County is the first one, probably Pope too. Yes. But anyway, Clay is in process of getting an atlas. And we haven't had testimony of this, what happens in an atlas. So the Constitution very clearly says protect groundwater. It says clearly says protect drinking water. And with this bill, we've taken a big step backwards. And I just feel compelled to bring that up and for folks to look at the maps and understand that there are big places in Minnesota that we know we don't have water. That's up in groundwater. That's up in Representative Dill's area. And we know that we have real problem areas in Representative, in the dark green, that's the Karst. But it's the orange area that we haven't even started to study. And yet Minnesotans are depending on this groundwater. And they're also depending on us not using it up too fast so the next generation can have some too. And that's my concern. And I wanted to put that on the table.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Did you have a bill on geological surveys?
Did I have a bill?
Yeah.
No, Mr. Yes. Chairman, I didn't have a bill. It is just a strict appropriation type thing. We have had DNR does part of the work, and the Geologic Atlas folks out of the University of Minnesota do part of the work, and they were going along at an extraordinarily slow pace. So 2 years ago in the water legacy money, we added to their pot. It takes them about 4 years to do an atlas of a county, working with the county. So you have to appropriate that money with a kind of a long, it's available for 4 years. There's also some from LCCMR.
But even with those two pieces of money, we're still only up to a 25-year time frame. And that just feels very inappropriate to me, that we should be accelerating rather than decelerating, because in the environment finance bill, we actually cut some of the money that DNR was using to work on atlases.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? We, again, do have some time for some public testimony. Again, I have a list here. If you're all here, you can come on up. You've got a few minutes each. Rebecca Flood. Is she here? The order that I have, so you can be ready, Daryl Gerber, Steve Morris, Trevor Russell, Chris Larson, and if John Jaffe is here, he would be last. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and we just wanted to express some concerns that the bill does not provide funding for inventories to be conducted by counties to identify imminent public health threat septic systems as recommended in the governor's biennial budget. The counties have provided an estimate that there are approximately 40,000 of these imminent public health threat septic systems in Minnesota. We believe that counties could be placed on a 10-year schedule similar to the 10-year monitoring and assessment and watershed approach schedule to identify these imminent public health threat systems and target those throughout the state and with the greatest potential to for those systems that have the greatest potential to contaminate lakes, rivers, streams, and groundwater that's used for drinking water. We also have some concerns regarding the 5% cap on indirect costs and some administrative language at the end of the bill, and I wanted to ask if you were interested in hearing those comments at this time or wait for a week from Tuesday.
Ms. Flood, perhaps you could give them to us in writing.
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to do so.
And then we would be, we'll be considering them in the next 2 weeks.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Otherwise, you love the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I've got a question.
Yes, Representative Murphy. I'm sorry. We have some questions, Ms. Flood. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Madam, Ms. Assistant Commissioner.
Flood.
Ms. Flood.
Think water.
Why would the emergency money for the septic systems, why would you be disappointed that it wasn't in the legacy money? Why is the legacy money for that? Was there regular money for septic systems and clean water from the environment bill?
Ms. Flood?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, there's $2 million in the governor's proposed budget that would go to counties to help them expedite the identification of these imminent public health threat systems. So it would be on top of their existing responsibilities, expedited responsibility to identify those systems on a more quick basis.
Ms. Flood, has the state in the past provided money to the counties to do this?
I believe that the state, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, that has not been provided to counties in the past.
So,
Representative Murphy?
And so, Ms. Flood, how did the governor think that the legacy money was for that purpose?
Ms. Flood?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, this is supplementing work that they already are required to do in their ordinances. And it would be expediting that work that they have as a part of their ordinance program.
Representative Cornish.
The commissioner?
Commissioner, do you have the oversight of the septic rules or how they enforce them statewide? Then is that in your area we're talking about that?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Representative Black. Cornish, yes, the Pollution Control Agency establishes the rules, and counties are required to adopt ordinances that are in conformance with those rules.
Good. Mr. Chair, I have to give you a little bit of a hard time up here. If it was in my purview, I would drastically cut the money that you're sending to counties for that effort, because they're harassing the people in my county. Recently, the county comes out and they've instituted a new system that if you get a permit to put on a wing on your house or you get a shed up in your yard, it doesn't matter if it has anything to do with sewer or water, it automatically triggers a permit check. And then the county comes out and you have to update your sewer. And in some cases, you've got elderly people living there. One has got two different locations and one farm across them, $10,000 each, and they can't do it. So then they can't get the permit to do the other things that they want. Well, then it's not good enough just left alone there. So they say, okay, I don't want the permit, thinking that they are going to get out from under the having to change the $20,000 worth of sewer. But then the county has turned the name into the PCA, and the PCA sends them a curt letter that says, unless you conform within so many days, we're going to fine you $500, what is it, a day or a month? Or something, and by such and such a date. And so there's no flexibility or common sense. And there's some counties statewide that have got it on a change of ownership, and then some counties have done this. Whatever permit you get doesn't have anything to do with sewer and water, so it's making for some real problems and an image problem where the PCA has overtaken the most reviled state agency over the top of the DNR now. So,
no.
Yeah, and so it's just my frustration and concern that there's no flexibility, and these elderly people get a letter saying $20,000, you fix it up, or we $500 a day, and then they're stuck in a hard spot there. So, just some. I wish there was more flexibility.
Other questions? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Just in a follow-up to Representative Murphy's question, I believe that you said that the governor asked for $2 million, but I don't believe that that was appropriated in our finance bill. Am I correct about that?
I don't, Representative Wagenius, I don't know. Representative McNamara?
The question was the $2 million that the governor asked for in legacy money in our environment bill? I don't believe it is. Is it, Ms. Lutz? No.
Okay. So, supplanting.
Thank you, Commissioner Flood.
Thank Flood.
You. Representative Cornish?
Just one correction. I shouldn't have said most reviled. I should have said the most questioned. I didn't mean that to sound that derogatory. I meant the ones that I get the most questions about.
And Representative Cornish, I want to go on record as saying that I love the DNR.
Me too. You're not running for re-election.
Wait a second. Well, at least today I do. Next, I believe we have Mr. Gerber. Mr. Gerber? You may. That doesn't mean that you each get 5 minutes.
Okay, so we take our 5 minutes separately?
No. Identify yourself, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Steve Morris. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. As you may know, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership is an organization of more than 80 environmental conservation groups in the state, representing more than 500,000 Minnesotans. I also had the pleasure of serving 12-plus years in the state Senate, including most of the time doing the budgeting for the environmental and ag programs over in the other chamber. So I've been around these issues for some time, and they're very important to me and to our members and our organizations. MEP was a long-time supporter of the constitutional amendment, getting involved not as early as some groups, but working on it for about 3 years before its final passage in 2008. And we, like many Minnesotans, were very relieved to see 1.6 million Minnesotans join together in tough economic times to vote to raise their taxes. And they did it to protect Minnesota's great outdoors for future generations, and it was the highest vote getter in the state that year. That brings us to the bill today and this committee's charge. This is the Legacy Committee, and it's charged with looking after the legacy funds, but it's important that we put that into a little bit of context, because the legacy questions, the questions of the legacy funds involves more than just what is in this bill. First, I'd like to start off by saying I had an opportunity to testify in the Environment Committee before a number of you, Representative McNamara and Torkelson and Wagenius. I think we're the at least the ones I recognize right off the mark here. And so I'll try, hopefully you'll bear with me a little bit. But this bill, we view as one of the bright spots in the legislative session, in that you're actually appropriating money to do more things, and it's actually more money to do more things, which doesn't happen very often. And in addition to that, the recommendations or the language in the bill is generally consistent with the citizen process, both by the LSOHC, the Clean Water Council, and not the citizen process, but you also have Parks and Trails funds. So it's bringing badly needed funds to protect our great outdoors. However, in the bigger picture of the overall state budget, this bill, when combined with the earlier omnibus environmental finance picture, paints a picture that is also contrary to the amendment. And together, we believe it does lose faith with Minnesota voters. Let me just explain why. When I know I distributed this earlier to the other committee, but I have two handouts. When the amendment was passed, the Constitution was amended to say that there are basically two tests to decide whether or not we're keeping our commitment to the amendment. And what the Constitution says is that under this section, we must supplement traditional sources of funding, and that's the first test, for these purposes, and these dollars may not be used as a substitute.
You guys got a lot of paper you're having.
What that first part of the test means, that they're used to supplement traditional sources of money, is that we have a maintenance of effort that is required. Traditional sources to protect our air, land, and water must be there so that we can build upon them, as Jim Nobles just said just a few minutes ago. The point is, the cuts that we've already seen pass through the House and the Senate, particularly the House, in the environmental finance bills, undermine this very thing, because you're taking away the foundation upon which this amendment was passed to build upon. As an example, two-thirds of the MPCA general fund dollars are slashed, 24% of DNR dollars are slashed, parks, trails, water programs, and we're going to see significant reduction in services. This is not what people had in mind when they voted for the amendment. The bottom line is, as you look at the letter that I sent out, that we signed earlier this year, it's probably still just coming along, signed by 60-some-odd groups, conservation groups, hunting and fishing groups, environmental groups. When the amendment passed, we got together and said, how do we decide whether or not the legislature and the state is being consistent in the implementation of this law? And we came up with three tests. One of them is that we just should keep our share. We understand the state general fund is going to rise and fall, shrink, contract. We just want to keep our share. And that, this year, is about 1%. So we're saying we want to keep our 1%, a paltry 1%, if you will. There's also a test about bonding, and there's also a test about other dedicated funds. But I want to talk about that 1%. The problem is that under the bill that has already passed, that falls to about 0.75%. We lose about a quarter of our share.
Which bill has already passed?
The budget bills, the omnibus budget bills.
And we, the point we are is, not a
which,
budget.
Which are not before you today. But, Mr. Chairman, the point is that the Constitution, which this committee is charged
the point,
with looking
excuse
at.
Excuse me, Mr. Gerber, the point is this. We appropriate money, let's say the DNR, and we tell the DNR in our bill that you can't substitute. You have to supplement. I mean, that's in the bill. No, we are not telling them with the money that we give them to supplant. If they do it in such a way that is supplantation, then that's something they're going to have to deal with. But that is not the intent of this committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I can I recognize that may well not be the intent of this committee. But what I would say is that when one arm of the legislature takes away all the funding, for example, the Clean Water Partnership dollars, and then this bill comes in and adds money for Clean Water Partnership dollars, it's very difficult to tell the agency, oh, please, don't substitute it. When one branch, one bill of government takes away all the money for the septics, and then in this bill we have more money for septics, which we think is good, it's hard to say that that's not a substitution. And that's really my point. What this will do is this bill, fundamentally, it funds programs such as the septics, such as the Clean Water Partnership, that have lost their traditional sources of funding that they are supposed to supplement. And we believe that that, in fact, constitutes a substitution.
Again, Mr. Gerber.
Mr. Morris.
I'm sorry. Where's Mr. Gerber? Once again, this bill was not put together by examining the budget bills. I didn't have the environment bill and go over that. And I mean, this is put together believing that we are putting in money to supplement. As I said before, we are independent of the budget committees, and we weren't studying to see what the budget committees were doing as we did this.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and again, I recognize that, and to address this bill directly, let me say that many of the appropriations in this bill are very sound, are sound on their own merits when looked at independently, so we do urge you to move ahead. But we have many steps to go before the end of this legislative process and all the bills are actually signed.
Now we're getting to a point where we agree.
And it could go on for quite some time. So please, as you're thinking about how you close out the legislative session, because we have to look at the legacy amendment in the context of the total state budget, not just what happens in this bill, think about what that means as you settle on ultimate targets for environmental finance, because we are disproportionately cutting the other parts of the environmental budget as we add to this. Think about ways that we can support the other traditional sources of revenue, such as fees that we have done traditionally, rather than relying on this new money. And again, voters did not vote to raise their taxes just to maintain the status quo. And I want to just call your attention to an article that was posted by the Post Bulletin on April 9th. And it was a John Weiss article wrote in the Post Bulletin, Rochester Post Bulletin. And he said the key to this amendment is that it would add to existing programs. And the legislature appears ready to bend the act's original intent, that would be the amendment's intent, and in fact to break it. And what I want to do is just sound a little bit of a caution. We're very concerned about the overall balance of what's happening in other parts of the bill versus this bill. There are a lot of good things in this bill. It's a bright spot. We appreciate all the work that's been put into it. But keep in mind that the future of the great outdoors is not a partisan issue. It's certainly not a Republican or Democratic, rural or metro. We had support from across the state in order to add to what we did. And so we hope that you'll keep the legacy in its totality, the legacy amendment in mind as you finish out the session, because we're deeply concerned about the substitution that we believe is occurring in some areas overall.
Well, thank you. I think we actually finished kind of on some points of agreement.
Well,
any questions of
Morris.
Mr. Morris, Mr. Gerber, or Mr. Russell?
Well, they have some other comments on you.
Oh, but we have more comments. Okay. But by the way, I don't want to forget this, so just a brief intermission here. We did comment to the PCA that if they have administrative cost suggestions, to get them to us. This is now for everyone. Members, anyone in the audience regarding representing a group or individual, if you really have some strong thoughts on how we can come to a reasonable conclusion with our administrative cost question, I would please like you to get those to me, your suggestions, by Monday of next week, so that Mr. Soderberg and his colleagues can work on this and get some thoughts to us. We are very serious about trying to reach an amicable solution, if one is possible, and sometimes I don't know if one is. Representative Green, did you have your hand up before? Did you want to?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say that I do feel like our mission as a committee is it's not just to take the legacy funds and figure out how to spend them, but also to represent the voters of Minnesota in their aim that we should spend supplemental money, not supplanting money, on these topics. And so I think... And I think I'm probably preaching to the converted, but I do think that we'd be naive to deny what else has gone on and just ignore that. We're not here just to spend the money. We're also here to protect this money as supplemental money.
Thank you, Representative Green. I share your thoughts. Continue.
Chairman, members, my name is Trevor Russell. I'm with a group called Friends of the Mississippi River. We're a group that advocates for clean water in the Mississippi River and throughout its watershed in Minnesota. I have some specific testimony related to Section 6, Part E. This is on page 41, beginning line 4114. In essence, this part of the bill allocates $12 million for the implementation of 50-foot stream buffers along public waters in agricultural areas throughout Minnesota. I will echo what Mr. Moore said to say. Overall, we strongly support the work this committee has done and applaud the interest in investing in agricultural stream buffers or filter strips in agricultural areas throughout Minnesota. Buffers are natural filters that use plants and trees to clean water, absorb pollutants, slow water runoff, reduce erosion, and protect surface and drinking water. And if you look at handout number one that I passed out, that's just a quick fact sheet on buffers, sort of what they are, how they work, what kind of pollution mitigation benefits we get from those. And in fact, stream buffers are such a good idea that 50-foot stream buffer in agricultural area has been existing state law for over 20 years. And if you see handout number two, this is Minnesota laws for stream buffers in agricultural areas. The back side of it looks at ditch buffers, but stay out of the front side. That's just the 50-foot stream buffer law in ag areas. So in essence, that 50-foot setback in agricultural areas has been existing state law for over two decades, and there is a question about investing new legacy money to pay individual landowners to comply with existing state law. It is tenuous at best to suggest the intent of the legacy amendment is to pay people to comply with existing law. We do want to point out, I passed out a map. If folks take a look at that, that's overall stream buffer compliance circa 2003-2004 of agricultural buffers along public waters. And the compliance rates are relatively low. Now, that might lead one to suggest, well, we should invest dollars or time or energy in upgrading that compliance because these buffers do have a pretty substantial pollutant mitigation capacity. Luckily, a number of counties have undertaken, because it is counties that are responsible for enforcing that law, they've undertaken compliance approaches that have been extremely successful at very low cost. And I'll give you a couple examples. First, Dodge County, Melissa DeVetter, their staff person there, with about 3-5% of her staff time in spring and fall over two seasons, has just conducted rudimentary public landowner outreach and succeeded in dramatically improving overall stream buffer compliance with relatively modest resources, nothing along the lines of $12 million. Dakota County, Olmsted, Dodge, and I think six different counties in southeast Minnesota have now undertaken the same kinds of programs, Goodhue and Wabasha and one other, and they are experiencing pretty high rates of return for landowners recognizing that they're out of compliance, coming into compliance, and solving this problem without having to use legacy dollars to pay them to do it. So we have an alternate approach to achieving these 50-foot stream buffers, which is telling landowners if they don't have them that it's existing state law, they need to have them, and then by and large, farmers, being folks that care about the quality of the land and the water, come into compliance on their own. We're also lucky to have, by my count, 12 different programs in Minnesota that provide cost share, technical assistance and equipment assistance to landowners that want to come into compliance with stream buffer law. We've got CSP, REM, EQIP, CRP, our Ag BMP loan program, a host of county SWCD watershed programs, and NRCS programs that exist specifically to provide the technical, financial, and equipment resources that landowners need to come into compliance with stream buffer law in Minnesota. So in essence, my testimony today is we would urge you to make this $12 million of ag stream buffer money available for the second 50 feet of buffer, not the first 50 feet of buffer. The first 50 feet of buffer is already required by existing law and is not an appropriate investment of taxpayer legacy money. The second 50 feet of buffer allows us to have 100 feet of buffers along targeted ag areas. That 100 feet is the scientifically accepted optimal buffer width that maximizes habitat and clean water and erosion and flood mitigation capacity, and also in essence extends the shelf life of those buffers. You can put a 25-foot buffer in place, as that first buffer fact sheet shows. You get relatively high pollution mitigation, but over time the capacity of that buffer to reduce water pollution, they lose that capacity over time. The shelf life isn't long. Once you get up to 100 feet, you've got virtually an indefinite shelf life for that buffer. Investing this money in the second 50 feet would be a far better investment of our resources than the first 50 feet. If you wanted to take a modest amount of this money and set it aside to pay counties to help do this landowner compliance approach that Dodge, Olmsted, Goodhue, Dakota, and other counties have undertaken, that would be an appropriate allocation of the money as well. But it would be FMR and MEP's position that paying landowners to comply with existing law is not an appropriate use of legacy money. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
President Farkelson.
Yes, if it's okay with the chair, I would request that Bowser come down and respond.
That would be fine with me. Ms. Blackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. The commentary and comments that we
identify
heard.
Identify yourself, please.
Sorry?
Identify.
Oh, I'm sorry. Julie Blackburn, Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. And those comments, we've heard lots of different places, and we certainly understand them. The problem with the 50-foot buffer that's required right now is it actually doesn't say anything about quality of that buffer. And also, in current shoreline rules, the 50-foot buffer is a requirement. However, in ag areas, if they have a conservation plan, the 50-foot buffer is not required. So it is an incentive to put in buffers where there aren't any, as well as to make sure that the 50-foot buffer that's there, at the minimum, is increased in habitat and in quality for water quality to the 100-foot minimum. So it's about quality. It's about making sure that that resource is managed as an entire ecological unit for the best outcome for that stream. And also some of this funding, $2.5 million of it is to match with the Outdoor Heritage Council for buffer strips that are in anticipation of 200 foot at least. And those need to be managed as an ecological unit. So when we go out there and we seed and we restore the shoreline in order to put in the buffer, we need to treat the whole thing as one, and that's part of it. We can't really take an easement only from that 50-foot, it's kind of for ease of the easement as well. We can't just take the easement from that 50-foot line or 51-foot line to the 100-foot line. That's just extremely difficult as far as real estate goes and making all those easement agreements work. There's just an extraordinary amount of detail, especially when you're following a river area. So for us, it certainly is about the ease of the easement, but it's also about the ecology of that unit as a whole. And I would take any questions about that.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. We're going to wrap up with Mr. Gerber now.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Daryl Gerber. I am a program coordinator with Clean Water Action. And I would just kind of touch real quickly on something that Commissioner Flood already brought up, and that's actually the septics issue that there are a couple handouts. And really what it is it's a chronic problem of just raw sewage that's ending up in our waters and our groundwater. And There is a 10-year plan that has been put out a number of years ago, and really one of the key pieces of that in order to actually meet that plan is continued funding. And we'd like to ask the committee to increase the funding in this to match the governor's recommendation. And really what we see kind of in the outcome is a couple really important public health issues here, along with environmental issues. You know, on the health side, there is the discharge. I mean, we're talking about raw, untreated sewage that's ending up in our waters. And that has a discharge of bacteria and other pathogens that are put out there. People that are swimming in these, there are beach closings, but that result from sewage being discharged. Of course, the problem is that all of the beaches are not consistently and frequently tested to really keep up on that. So the swimmers can be exposed to a number of possible minor up to much more severe health impacts, as well as the possibility of the sewage getting into the drinking water, either surface water, or probably more a bigger impact is the well water that many people in the rural communities rely on. So we are talking about 500,000 homes in the last survey in Minnesota, along with 7,000 businesses, and about 40% of these fit into this category of either failing or are imminent threats to public health and safety.
So. Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Gerber? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hey, with that, I think we'll be back after break. Again, we'll do the arts, history, culture amendments. We'll do language amendments. You will have been sending in your suggestions on the administrative cost, or if you've got any other burning issues that you want to see addressed that we can address before the next session. And we'll also, if somebody has some, mainly next time the comments are on the arts, history, culture, but if some of you still have, again, burning comments, you can make them on this as well. So, anything else? If that, well, King, this case is closed.